I was on this fast fashion site last week. It looked like the models were, just not very pleased with where they were at in life.
I never really got that. Why is that the vibe?
Yeah, I'm not fitting in that well, being all happy and stuff. I need to get this product right, so I can bring it down a notch.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of E-Commerce Unscripted, the podcast where we help you achieve WooCommerce mastery. My name is Sam. I am a marketer here at GoDaddy, and I am joined today by two fantastic panelists. First up, coming to you from the theme park capital of the world, Marcus Burnett. Marcus, please introduce yourself.
Hey, Sam. Thanks for having me. My name is Marcus, and I'm on the care team for GoDaddy. And theme park capital of the world, I guess. I'm in Orlando, or right outside of Orlando in Florida.
And coming to you from the poutine capital of the world? What would you say Montreal is the capital of? Anyway, Tabitha Turton. Tabitha, please introduce yourself and give us some local color.
Hey, everyone. I'm Tabitha, and I'm a product manager here at GoDaddy. And yes, I would say that we are the poutine capital of the world, along with probably all wonderful Canadian dishes that you ever think of. They probably all found their start here, including, I believe, Hawaiian pizza, which I guess some people might be on the fence about. I, for one, love Hawaiian pizza.
There's just something fitting about Hawaiian pizza coming from Montreal. That just adds up.
Yeah, what do we have? Corn dogs or something in Florida? I don't know. Yeah. It's not a culinary masterpiece of a state. Yes,
the native cuisine of Orlando is the chain restaurant, I believe.
Yes, I think you might be right.
Today, we are talking about product photography. And these are excellent panelists for product photography. I know both are huge photography enthusiasts. And photography is a very important part of an e-commerce site, arguably. It could be said it's the most important part of your product pages. So today we're going to talk about why product photography is so important to WooCommerce stores. We're going to talk about how you can take better pictures to improve your store or the stores you make for your clients. We'll discuss strategies on even what types of photos you should use and some basics. We can't do all photography in one brief podcast, but we'll give you some basics on how to take some good product photos yourself. But first, we are going to start with a few questions. How important are photos to you when you're shopping online?
I think they're the most important thing for me. I can't imagine buying a product online without seeing any photos. But just as important as having photos, though, is having photos that accurately show the item being purchased. There are a couple of other variables that might decide whether or not I take a chance on a product, but just having the highest quality photos and accurately showing what the product is, I don't think there's anything more important for me.
I don't think I've ever bought anything without a product photo. Like, I just wouldn't. I need to see that at least one image. And even if there are limited images, I'm less likely to purchase it. I want to see it from different angles. I want it to be a well taken image, just because that also, I'm sure we're going to go into more details. Never mind. So, right. Yes, very important.
Good. Thank you. Yes. Tabitha, thank you for not spoiling the entire podcast. We have to wrap up in 5 minutes and people would be like, why is this podcast 5 minutes long?
One answer, yes. Hit all the topics.
Yes.
And, right. And both just of a little answers... passionate about photography.
Both of your answers are very typical for the average customer. According to a study, 75% of shoppers say they rely on product photos when they're deciding a purchase. And the quality of images influences 90% plus of purchases more than any other factor. Have you ever returned a product because it didn't look like the photos?
Yeah, that was a good question. I had to think about it, and I don't believe I ever have. But I did work in an e-commerce store for a while, and we had this issue often, primarily because the color would be off. So and that has to do with how it was shot, you know, whether it was like natural light, or maybe they had shot a picture of it in like a dark warehouse. So a lot of customers would end up returning items because it wasn't similar to what they expected.
So the one that comes to mind for me, I have two younger daughters, and to help them sleep at night, they like to have like these little star projector things in their rooms. And we got some a while back. If you ever have done research on star projectors, they're very expensive, but if you get the cheaper ones, it's affordable. But the photos almost always look like it's a galaxy sky from, out in the Grand Canyon. And I don't know why they decide to go that direction, because that is not even close to what those look like projected on the ceiling and walls in the children's rooms. So I did make that, I guess it's a mistake. I made the mistake of believing the photos when it looked like it was, you know, going to be this galaxy sky. And it ended up being kind of a gentle blue glow coming from a black orb on their dresser. And not quite a star projector. So I did end up having to return that one and go another price point higher to try and get one that actually had stars.
Yeah, those are good ones. And by the way, of the products that are returned to stores, almost 1 in 4 are returned because the product looks different in person than it did in the photography. So that can be a major cause of returns. And, well, you can hear also Tabitha and Marcus on another podcast episode where we talk all about returns. But let's just say this dovetails into that. Returns can be a major cost center for e-commerce stores. And if you're getting a lot of returns because of your product photos, that seems like a quick fix, or at least a manageable fix in order to reduce that number of returns. All right, next question. How do you feel about stock photos on e-commerce sites?
Yeah, if we're talking about, I assume we're talking about stock photos of the product itself, right? So in the general sense, if the product is a like new and sealed item and you're selling the same product over and over again, I think I'm okay with it. I do generally like to see a little bit more than that. If it's a used item or a handcrafted item, then I definitely would like to see the actual item itself, preferably from a number of angles. So it really just kind of depends on the item itself and what's being sold.
Yeah, I'm with Marcus there. For instance, if I'm looking at something like a tech item, I want the stock photos. I want to be able to see like the panel on the back, so I can make sure I've got all the right inputs, outputs, whatever. So I'm not really concerned about stock photography there. I just want to have many images. But there are some weird model stock photos. Those are wrong. They should not be used.
It's interesting because I agree with that completely. Like there's been, you know, as drop shipping has gotten more sophisticated and there's become a lot of those like drop shipping clothing companies where you can with customized t-shirts, you know, they make a million t-shirts and they're not actually producing these. These are printed on demand. Mm-hmm. And it always hits like some sort of uncanny valley thing for me when they show the same model in the exact same pose with the shirt wrinkled in the exact same way, wearing 1,000 different shirts. Like to me, that is so disingenuous, and it makes me think, oh, it's just a drop shipping site. Like, I don't know what I'm going to get here. Like, I prefer if you just show me the picture of the shirt and then maybe order a few of them and take a few photos yourself of these shirts. I think that would go so much further than just having the same model wearing every shirt over and over and over again.
Yeah, with the exact same pose.
Yeah, you get like a clone trooper vibe.
Yes. Totally.
Stock photos, as we were discussing once upon a time, stock photos are in fact a proven turnoff. We have all become conditioned at this point to more or less ignore them. Less than 10% of marketers say that stock photos have the most impact, even though they are the most frequently used type of photos. But basically, the majority of people just want to see photos that bring products to life. And they want to also feel emotions from the products they see. There's something called the somatic marker hypothesis, which basically says if you can show a customer a photo of a product and evoke an emotional response to them. So maybe you're showing the product in action, whatever it may be. Once they see that, they'll want to buy it and they'll stop processing and overthinking all the little details, all of the product specs. It will lead to a more emotion-driven purchase. I definitely know this happened to me once when I was trying to decide on a car. And I saw that like there's this picture of a Jeep Wrangler and it was like in the sunset and they had like their surfboards in the back of it. And it just did something for me, even though one, I'm not cool. Two, I've never surfed, even though I live in Southern California and I never was going to surf. But something about that product was so evocative that I did, in fact, wind up buying that car.
And yeah, you don't surf, but you know, you could if you had that Jeep Wrangler.
Exactly. And yes, then I would be like at doing cool sunset surfs, and that product photo just it over, because all the rest of the specs of the car were so beyond impractical for where I was in life, what I need. Like, it's not a car for someone who's commuting. Like, this car is it got horrible gas mileage, and you know, what am I gonna have the top down year round as I'm driving to work at 8 in the morning? No, but something about that product photo like hit me in the exact right spot at that point in my 20s where I was like, yeah, this is me. This is who I want to be. Have you ever had that happen to you where like a product photo just hit you in the right spot?
For me, it's pretty much any like Apple advertisement. I think they do a pretty good job of making me want the ridiculously named thing. No matter what the name is or how much it costs, I see these people, you know, enjoying themselves with their new phone, with these crazy nice photos and their AirPods and iPads and all that stuff. And they're productive and they're happy and they're having fun and, you know, works on me every time.
Right. It's selling that lifestyle. And I guess it's happened to me with furniture. There's this Eames chair that I've been eyeing for probably a good decade now, which I will eventually get. But yeah, every time, like there have been some really amazing product shots of it that just create, they don't have models in there. Like it's a space where I can imagine myself in that space, relaxing, reading a really good book in that lounge chair. So that's like something I aspire to once I have more space and I'm not in such a little cramped city apartment.
Yeah. I have that too with pictures of people like reading in lake houses. I no longer am swayed by surfing advertising, but reading in a peaceful lake house at this age. Oh, you could sell me anything if you show me that the product is going to make that happen.
You can't read in a Jeep Wrangler at sunset.
You can't do you. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't even know if it had interior lights. I don't know. Actually, my Jeep Wrangler did. It ended when it eventually got stolen from me while I was out at a restaurant. Someone stole it off the streets of Beverly Hills, California, of all places. My Jeep Wrangler was stolen amidst the sea of much more expensive cars. The police
they saw that photo.
Yeah.
They saw that. They wanted to live the beach style surfer life.
Maybe they took it to the beach before then they took it to a chop shop and stripped it down where the cops found it a few days later. But yeah, first we surf, then we sell this thing for money.
That's right.
That's
right. Priorities.
All right. And our final question, what is your pet peeve when it comes to product photos on e-commerce sites? We've already discussed one big one, which is the Clone War stock models wearing suits. But do you have any other issues with product photography you see on sites?
I want more than one image. Like, no. If there's just one product image, I'm skipping that item. And that's probably why I haven't really returned anything based because it wasn't like the photos that I won't buy anything unless I see many images from different angles, just so that it kind of recreates that in-store experience and I have a really good sense of what the end product will be like. And I want to be able to zoom in. So that's more of like, not so much about the image quality itself, but well, in a way it is like you want, you know, pixel dense image so that then you can check out the details.
And Marcus, what about you? What's your pet peeve with product photos?
Yeah, I think for me, one of my biggest pet peeves of product photos is just not being able to tell scale in a photo. Mm. My wife got me a mug for Valentine's Day this year. It was like a custom mug with our names and like some mountains and stuff. It was really neat, but it was relatively tiny and she did not know how large the mug was going to be. And it holds like, you know, maybe half a can of soda or something. It's quite small. So I think just having some reference of scale, I think that's where some of those lifestyle photos do come in. Being able to have it in a space so that you can kind of see the size of things is important.
Yeah, I would agree. I think good studio shots of products are important, but I really do like to see a little bit of a product in use, in actual use, not just photoshopped onto a stock image. When I do see that, I'll often then rely on the user provided photos. If someone has product reviews where people are providing photos, and I'll rely on those. And I think as a merchant, while those are helpful, you don't necessarily want a customer fully relying on those because you have so much less control of what's in those photos. You can have control of how I see your product in action if you actually take pictures of their product in action. So I find that helpful. And many of the things we've discussed we'll actually get to in our next segment, because we'll be talking about all sorts of strategies upcoming on how to take better pictures, how to use better pictures, strategies for the type of pictures you should have, and some WooCommerce extensions you can use to provide a better experience on your site as people look through your product photos. So we'll be right back to talk about all that after this.
A free domain and SSL certificate, super fast setup, daily backups, tons of free website themes, and thousands of dollars of included plugins, all for under $20 a month? It's true. Check out GoDaddy's managed hosting plans at GoDaddy.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Now we're going to discuss some strategies to improve your product photography in all ways. We're going to start with some basic ones, then move on to more intermediate and advanced ones. So the first basic strategy we're going to go into is simply using larger images. 50% of customers say that large, high-quality images are more important than information, descriptions, or reviews.
I think the saying holds true there that a picture is worth 1,000 words, right? Having a lot of detail in your photos helps customers make the right, make the decision, get the message across the quality of your product. I think with most sales at this point happening on mobile devices, I think the bar is relatively low, although, people will still zoom in on those photos, but I don't think they have to be quite as large as you might think they might need to be, but still large enough to be able to zoom in and see detail. And then if you have a product that has detail, like, a fine watch or a dollhouse, or like Tabitha mentioned earlier, a TV, something that has some detail that you want to see, making sure that you have enough images to show all of those, and also the ability to see the detail there, especially if it's something like a watch that's going to cost quite a bit of money. You want to make sure that you're making the right purchasing decision.
Tabitha, what are your thoughts on using larger images and the benefits therein?
Agree 100% with everything Marcus mentioned. I think large images can be very useful, especially for zooming in. Let's say if you're selling something like a fashion item, people might want to check out the stitching. So it's really about having high quality detailed images. You don't necessarily need to have, this massive image upload to your site to just handle all the zooms. Like, you could break it up so that you're offering multiple images from different angles, different like zoom-ins of areas on the product, so that the customer doesn't have to just rely on that one like high quality image. So yeah, the more images, the better.
Yeah.
And the bigger they are, not necessarily technically the better, like because of the mobile experience, but you still want something that's high quality and crisp.
Right. And now another basic strategy I want to talk about, and we can talk about the pros and cons here, is incorporating user-generated content, like user-generated photos, to your site. Now, there are some definite pros in that it's a de facto endorsement when someone takes a picture of your product in use and you share it. This can really show your products in action, but you have less control of the quality, how things are being presented. So what do you think? Are user-generated photos a good idea to have on an e-commerce site? Tabitha?
Oh, 100%. Yes, I absolutely believe that they are a good idea. You may want to have some sort of moderation system set up just in case it gets weird. I personally always find it very amusing when people put like their hand or their foot in for scale. It's like, I don't know how big your hand is, so it's not necessarily helpful, but I do appreciate it. Like, I love user-generated photos because it takes some of the effort off of your plate as a merchant. You're, instead the customers are providing a lot of this content, and you're going to get some really interesting angles, also all sorts of lighting conditions, which can give the potential customer, a better idea of what the final item is going to be like. And even if the customers mentioned too, like, this is the exact color that I expected, or maybe it's more of an orangey red versus a purple red, So like, these things can be really helpful for preventing those returns.
And Marcus, what do you think about user-generated photos?
Yeah, I 100% agree with everything Tabitha said. I noted also the moderation part. I have had sites where we've had to do a little bit of cleanup there because it can be a little bit tricky when you don't have control over what's being posted. But I also noted that, like, I think they're seen as more reliable sometimes than the actual photos being provided by the merchant. More truthful, more accurate, because they're not put under these pristine conditions for these for the product photo and that sort of thing. So they can be seen as more reliable sometimes. And then I've been shopping for a new camera, and I find this really important to be able to see the photo quality of the photos being taken of that camera. So having users be able to upload photos that they've taken with the camera allows me to have a better idea of what's, you know, what the capabilities of the camera are. I know it's a little bit meta for this, but
yes, I was
I love it.
You want photos of the photos as we talk about photos.
Exactly.
If you're interested in incorporating some user-generated content into your site, there are some WooCommerce extensions you can use. Rather, there's also some WordPress extensions you can use, obviously, with WooCommerce, like Instagram feed, and there are a number of others. We'll link to a few of them in the show notes. But these are things you may want to use if you want to start adding a feed of your customers' photos to your site. And now we're going to move into some more intermediate techniques, some more extensions you can use on your WooCommerce site. And the first one we're going to talk about here is WooCommerce 360 degree image. So with WooCommerce 360 degree image, basically you can just provide photos that show a 360 degree rotating view of a product. It's been found to lower the return rates by 50%. Products with those 360 degree images are 85 times more likely to get positive reviews and have been shown to get a 30% higher conversion rate. Those are some pretty staggering numbers.
I really love this extension. I don't necessarily think that it's needed for every type of product, but there are certainly specific product types that could benefit from this. I think one that comes to mind for me is hats. I enjoy wearing hats, but a lot of times I find that the photos are missing, like what the back of the hat looks like, how it closes, or you know, whether it's, you know, solid in the back, like a flex type thing. And having that 360 degree view, a lot of times hats have stitching on the sides or stitching on the back as well. And being able to have kind of that 360 view all the way around helps me make sure that I'm buying exactly what I want to be buying from that merchant.
I think it's a really great replacement for that in-store experience. So you can see it from all the angles. It's mimicking being able to pick it up and like turn it around in your hands. So and it makes it really simple. All you have to do is take pictures of like a set of pictures of the product from all of the different angles and then upload those in, and the plugin takes care of the rest for you. It creates like this rotator so that the customer can just easily, even on like a mobile device or a touch screen, move around the item to see it from every angle. And I never even thought about that with hats. Like, I think that makes sense because you can then also have a good idea of like how long the bill is and everything, but probably wouldn't be that useful for a t-shirt, but I know like for kitchen items, it's probably useful, tech devices, and then like shoes.
Yeah. Toys to be able to buy those, because that's what you would do in the store, right? You'd, like you said, you'd pick it up, you'd turn it around, look at all the sides, see what's going on with that toy. And I had that as one of the crucial ones too.
Yeah, those are all great. But another case too, as we'll get into, where good photos are going to make a difference here. You're going to want to have nice photos backing this up, because again, if you're showing a 360 degree image, but the photos are low quality or pixelated, or you're not taking them in such a way that they're consistent, that's going to be a more jarring experience. Like if the lighting changes as someone's rotating the image around, that's going to probably be more disconcerting than helpful as they're trying to get an image of what this is. So another extension we're going to talk about, which also leads into like what Tabitha was saying, bridging that gap between the in-store and the online shopping experience, is WooCommerce Additional Variation Images. This allows you to add photos for different variants of your products. So often as someone switches between the variants, let's say on a shirt, they can see just the front view as they switch from the green shirt to the blue shirt. Here you could also upload additional images of that blue variation, the back, the side. You could have that of the green shirt, the back, the side. So that way someone can just get a view of how their specific variation is going to look across the board.
Yeah, I know for myself, it's one of my pet peeves when I choose a variation on the dropdown and then they don't have an image for that specific variable. It's frustrating because then I have to think, okay, well, if it's just a color difference, like it's not a big deal, but I lose a little confidence in that merchant. Yep. I don't know what it's going to look like exactly. And it could be for the smallest things. Like I'd like to have an idea of that 3-foot cord versus that 6-foot cord and the 10-foot cord. I just want to know that they've been thorough, that it's not going to become to me like an orange, you know, versus black for like their default wire cords or whatever. So it's just, I think it's a very useful way to provide that peace of mind to your customers and to just be super thorough so that they have that confidence in shopping with you.
Yeah, Marcus, what are your thoughts about additional variation images?
Yeah, I'm with Tabitha on that one for sure. I think anything that kind of removes the mystique and the guessing game of what am I going to get, it builds trust and it helps reduce returns and it helps keep, you know, your time and your money. Keeps it so you don't have to spend more than you need to because you're shipping the right thing, the thing that the customer expected to get. And putting the burden on the customer to play that guessing game, am I going to get the thing that I think I'm going to get when I switch this. Like Tabitha said, I've had that where I switch the length of a cable and then it comes in a different color. And you're like, well, that's not at all what I thought I was going to get because the image you showed me was a black cable or whatever. And then you have to decide, you know, do I live with the orange cable? Do I send it back? All of that. It becomes more than it needs to be, all because you just didn't include an image of what it was going to be in the first place.
I know I personally would rather not have audiovisual equipment that have to use an orange cable, but that's just me personally. I've actually been burned by this as well. Like I once ordered a t-shirt, and they showed the only image that they had of the front showed it on like an oatmeal colored shirt, and it was good. I ordered the black version, and then the graphic on it had like an oatmeal background square around it on the black shirt.
No.
It was, you know, but that's one of those like, do I want to go through the hassle of returning this? So I think somewhere in a storage bin somewhere, I still have my black shirt with the oatmeal backgrounded graphic on it.
Right. And that feels untrustworthy, right? I mean, right. The chances that you're going to buy another shirt from them now have drastically reduced. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Did you shop with them again?
I have never shopped with them again. That's a good point. And yeah. I have looked back at the site and it does stick in the back of my mind of the time when I ordered the variant and it didn't match what I wanted it to. And yeah, it's affected me going back and shopping there in the future. That anecdote alone.
Right.
Scare everyone into using additional variation images. All right, let's move over to the advanced strategies. And what we're going to do here is, again, although we can't cover all of this today, we're going to try to give just some basic photography advice for product photography. We're going to do our best to get the basics out. Of course, we'll link to some further reading material if you want to go down the road. But if you just want to leave this podcast and go take better photos now, we're going to talk about a few of the basics. So the first thing is, let's talk about setup. Marcus, what would you recommend someone setting up the space for them to take pictures of their products?
The most important thing is going to be the image quality, right? So make sure that you have a camera that takes, you know, decent photos, whether that's a DSLR camera or a smartphone that's, you know, been made in the last couple of years that takes, you know, pretty high resolution photos. That's going to be most important. And then the other thing that helps with the clarity is just not having your hand shake. It's really hard to hold things still all the time. So making sure that you put your camera or phone on a tripod and aiming it at your product will reduce the shakiness and make sure that your product is clear. And then the other most important part there is going to be lighting. I'm trying not to take everything away from Tabitha, but you know, having really great lighting so that people can see your product, whether that's shooting next to a large window and having natural light or using artificial light with a couple of lights set up around, it's going to make all the difference in your customers being able to see exactly what they're getting.
Sure. And Tabitha, anything to throw in there on the setup, the lighting?
Oh, I appreciate, Marcus, that you left me a few things. So I'm sure that these are on your list as well, but you want to think about your backdrop. So having something that is going to be pretty plain, you don't want a distracting backdrop unless you're trying to put the item into like a natural setting and also to do like some sort of size comparison. But in general, if it's just like a real focus on the product, then perhaps using some sort of background suite for that, which would just be like a, you know, a curved, uncreased, large white paper in its simplest form. I would also make sure to have a backup memory card on hand, especially if you're shooting with DSLR, because photos are free. So take as many as you can, and you can just quickly switch that out. I also like using a shutter release if I'm on a tripod, just to further reduce the camera shake. And those can be pretty cheap. You can get them as little as like $5 or $10 for like a really basic one. That can also be helpful if you're going to put together a video for the product as well, just to reduce that a bit. And then I would recommend shooting in RAW, which is a file format that just ensures that you're taking it in the largest format possible. And you can do all the post-processing within an app that's in a non-destructive way. So if your camera has an option for RAW, just shoot in RAW.
Going back to the what you talked about with the white curved paper, there are a number of products out there. They're little like black collapsible boxes that have the curve in them. They work for generally for smaller products. You know, if you're selling motorcycles, you probably can't fit one of those in there. But
in a general, Lego motorcycle.
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
If your motorcycle's on a white background, it's probably tiny. Mental notes.
Yes. Have you ever used those? What would you recommend with those? Some of those also will come with like a little bit of lighting built into them. Is that going to be sufficient, or do you need to buy one of those lighting kits to have lights on the sides, lights coming from the top? What would you recommend in terms of that kind of setup?
I personally haven't used one, but I've been eyeing one for a while to get for, because I like shooting like miniatures, so like Legos.
So tiny motorcycles.
Yeah. More like spaceships, because I'm really into the space Lego. Sure. But, yeah.
I should introduce you to my five-year-old, because he's super into those too right now.
Maybe we can start training. Yeah. But I would still, like, even though I haven't used one yet, I would still make sure to have like an LED panel light or two on hand, because I'm not super confident in the color of the light that it's going to provide, and then if it's going to be sufficient light. Because it also depends on the space that you're in as well, how much natural light is coming in. Maybe do you have an experience with them, Marcus?
I've used one a couple of times. I think, like you said, Sam, there are a number of them online, and I think it's one of those that you get what you pay for type deals, where if you get one of the lower end ones, the lighting is going to be lower quality and the color isn't going to be very accurate. But as you step up in the price ranges, that starts to get better and better at each level. I mean, I do like those. I think just sort of to tangent into one of the other things that I had here was this sort of a personal preference, but keeping your like grid of items consistent. So if you're going to use one of those boxes, maybe make sure that you're using that for all of your photos so that they look consistent across. If you're going to do like lifestyle photo type stuff, make sure that you're doing that for all of your products. Going back and forth between the lifestyle photos and the like little box photos or white paper background photos can be a little bit more jarring. So I think consistency was just one of the other things that I wanted to mention there.
Yeah, and that can also help you keep consistently sized thumbnails on your site, because that can make a much more aesthetically pleasing grid of your products being displayed on your site. Mm-hmm. What do you think of lighting? Do people need to invest in serious lights? Would putting a little like ring light above their camera work well enough? Do you need to have lights from the side? Marcus, you had even mentioned just relying on natural light. I know that it can be hard for those of us who don't have an eye for lighting to really understand how to affect how something looks, how to get rid of shadows, etc. What would be the sort of basic lighting advice you would give?
I think you mentioned sure. Marcus, right?
Any gaffers in the crowd?
I mean, again, it's going to depend on what you're shooting, but I think keeping it simple makes the most sense, especially if you have lots of products and you want to shoot the same thing over and over again. You want to keep it consistent from shot to shot, from, you know, this month to next year. Keeping the lighting setup as simple as possible makes sense. I think having, you know, sort of a larger overhead, slightly off to the side light makes sense for smaller products and stuff. If you are shooting motorcycles and you're in the studio, you're definitely going to have to get a lighting setup. You're going to want to get all those reflections in the metal of the motorcycle and or car or whatever. So I think it depends a little bit on what you're shooting. I think for most people's purposes, keeping the lighting setup simple makes the most sense.
I guess, yeah, you really need to take your environment into consideration. You don't necessarily need to invest in more lights. If you have some decent natural light coming in, you could use bounces. Maybe enlist a friend or a colleague to hold like a big card up, some sort of white card or reflective surface that could bounce some light against the product that you're shooting as well. So there are ways around it. Also just shooting at the right time of day. When is it brightest? And then trying to maximize on that light. You don't want to start at dusk or dawn. Those are really great hours for other types of photography, but not for your products.
I know this is the part where it can get into deep technical areas, but do you have any advice on settings you should use with your camera when you're shooting photographs? I'm not going to even attempt to start naming things that I'm thinking of here because I will just sound like I don't know what I'm talking about because I don't. So any advice on what you camera settings as you're taking product photos?
If you are using a DSLR and you haven't really played around with the different setting options, I would default to manual because, you know, most DSLRs nowadays have a really awesome setup. Not manual, automatic. Totally opposite. So like just go fully automatic. Don't do manual until like you have a day and you just want to play around and get to know the ins and outs. And even then after that day, don't go fully manual for your product shoot. But if you want to like kind of go outside of the fully auto setting, the aperture priority, if you have that on your camera, that's the go-to because that will take care of your shutter and your ISO settings, but it will then you have the override over the depth of field. And so that's just basically how fuzzy it gets behind the object that you're shooting. And so like a lot of artistic photos, you'll see that really cool bokeh effect where everything is kind of fuzzy behind it. You don't really want that for your products unless you're trying to pull off some sort of artistic interest shot. You'll most likely want to increase your depth of field so everything is crisp that's in within the lens. You can do that then with that aperture priority setting. Just, you know, kick your f-stops. Use the highest number that's available.
And Marcus, anything to add there?
Yeah, I'll just insert some more jargon. No, I mean, aperture priority is also generally where I tend to sit for shooting product stuff. I think more important than anything else is just making sure that your products are in focus. Use that autofocus. Make sure that what you're shooting is nice and crisp and clear, and the aperture priority falls right in line with that too. Make sure that your depth of field isn't too shallow so that people get a good idea of what they're buying from you.
All right. And finally, any other little tips, big tips you could give to people when it comes to shooting their own product photography?
I personally really like the focus peaking feature. It's on my camera, and I expect that it's probably on most others. It basically, you can then see these running ants outlined around all of the edges when you use the focus peaking. It tells you whether or not you've really focused correctly, which is not always obvious to the naked eye. If you're using manual focus, which I tend to do because I use a lot of prime lenses, so like fixed focal length lenses. So that can be really useful because as Marcus has said, it's so important to have everything in focus because it creates that goodwill, that confidence with your customer, also makes sure that they can zoom in and check out the quality of the item. And then the other thing that I would recommend beyond keeping things in focus, just make sure that you don't have other things falling into the picture. Make sure you don't, you know, have a thumb or a finger that has crept in, or a strap or some sort of, you know, device or something has fallen onto the background. Just and that can creep in really quickly. Myself a lot.
or other similar items where you don't know which one is the subject, so you don't know which one it is that you're purchasing.
Yeah, that's the old like online dating thing where it's a photo of four people and you're not sure who's the one who belongs to the online dating profile.
Yeah, exactly.
Marcus, any thoughts, other tips?
Yeah, the last tip that I had is a little less technical, and I think Tabitha's hit on it a couple of times too, is just make sure that you have lots of angles up close and further away. That way you can get, you know, detail work like stitching and clothing, and then, you know, the overall view pull out and be able to take a more overall shot. And that way you cover your bases and everybody knows exactly what they're getting.
Great. And the other advanced technique we want to just briefly touch on is A/B testing with your photos. Once you have really good product photography and you have a number of options to choose from, this can be a case where you want to test to see which photos perform better, lead to better conversions. For instance, testing when you have a person in the photo versus just the product by itself, things like that. Marcus, any thoughts on A/B testing your photos and where you'd recommend people get started with that?
Yeah, I think that is a great idea. And I think what came to mind for me pretty quickly was like outdoor equipment. If you have like an outdoor store, it might be easy for you to, you know, take lots of photos of the equipment in the store. But that's one of those places where I feel like lifestyle type photos work really well, where people can see someone using a canoe out on the lake that you're selling, or, you know, campfire equipment and that sort of thing. So testing between what might work better between some lifestyle photos or just pure shots in like a studio setting might help determine which are better for helping you sell that sort of thing.
All right. We'll be back right after this to do your question and answer.
It's time to get your clients selling online in less time and for less money with GoDaddy Hosting. Learn more at GoDaddy.com.
We are back to do some question and answer. Our first question today, I want to set up a subscription product, a digital one, where customers can choose their price. What's the best way to do that? Tabitha, any solutions for someone who wants to do a name your own price subscription product?
Okay. That's why, like, I was curious, like, is that a name your own price? There is actually a plugin called Name Your Price that lets you do this. And what's really cool is it integrates with the WooCommerce subscriptions plugin natively. So you can then set it up in such a way that people can choose their own price, and then it will handle the recurring payments through the subscriptions plugin for you. So you don't have to do anything manually. And once it's integrated with WooCommerce subscriptions, you'll be able to send out notifications and whatnot too. And then you can also manage your other subscription products if you have those as well.
Great. Marcus, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I would go to as well. Yeah. I think the only thing I would mention there is just that Name Your Price does have the ability for you to set like a minimum and maximum as well, which makes it nice to be able to make sure that you can, you know, cover your costs and that sort of thing.
Yeah, you can use it, of course. Name Your Price works for things other than subscription products as well, but that's a good place to use it. I know a lot of charities also like Name Your Price. It comes up a lot in that use case. All right, our next question. Oh, Tabitha, this one takes us back to our roots. You ready?
All right. Right.
How frequently should I be emailing my list? I send one email a week, and I'm afraid if I send more often, it's going to turn my customers off. All right, well, I know that this one, we've answered this before, but Marcus, I'd be curious your thoughts on how frequently you should be emailing.
Yeah, this is not my area of expertise, so I'll mostly defer to Tabitha on this one. Not hourly, let's go with that.
It's safe, yeah.
I think for me personally, it depends a bit on what the expectation is. If I signed up for, you know, a weekly newsletter or a daily digest or whatever, then, you know, that's not counting against me if you decide to send something else in addition to that throughout the week or that sort of thing. But like I said, I only have personal anecdotes for how many emails I get versus want, and I'll leave the rest up to Tabitha there.
Yes, all right, Tabitha. I know you've had this conversation with, you know, one or two or 7,000 stores over the course of your career. So, yes, what are your thoughts on email frequency? In a nutshell, because we could talk about it forever.
We could. But I think I loved how you phrased that, Marcus, with setting expectations, because that's so true. Like as long as you adopt a cadence and that's what your subscribers are expecting or get used to over time, you stick to it, then that's what's going to work. And also make sure that you're providing value with each email that you send. So it doesn't need to be limited to just a single email per week or even per month. You could send multiple emails per week. I've seen as many as 5 emails go or more. That can be especially helpful during like a sales period if it's an increased amount over like your regular sending. But some people also sign up for daily. But it's all about providing that value and making sure that these are the emails that your subscribers have opted in to receive. So I typically recommend to start, though, if you're looking to increase your cadence, start with sending like a weekly sales email, product announcement, and something that's informative. So you could start with 3 emails a week that hit each of those notes. And if you have the option with your email provider to also let your subscribers choose their interests or their preferred sending cadence, then that's another bonus, because then you could really target it to your various segments, so that only those that are interested in your sale announcements and like new products that you might be coming out with would get those 2 emails during the week.
When we see questions like this, a lot of time they're referring to the broadcast emails, which are your newsletters, your sales announcements, things like that. And I think that's the cadence where you need to sort of establish a frequency. You don't want to get wildly all over the place. And sometimes you're sending 1 a month, sometimes you're sending 4 a week. That's going to cause problems. That's going to cause all sorts of problems. But there's another type of emails that you should be sending from your store, and those are your automated emails. And those, I wouldn't worry as much about the frequency of those, because those are generally triggered by different events. So, you know, if you're sending a broadcast email announcing a sale, and then the next day a customer gets an automated email because it's their 1 year anniversary of their first purchase, that you're sending them, that person now two emails a week, but the second one, the automated one, is more triggered, more targeted, more personalized. So if you have all of your automation set up, which as we've shown over and over can be the most effective types of sales emails to send, those can fill in the gap around when you're sending your big broadcast tier list. So that's also something to keep in mind. Get your automations going, and then those will just fill in those gaps. So, all right. Well, that's going to do it for our episode on product photography. It was really informative, and I know I learned a lot, and I'm ready to go shoot some pictures of things if only I had something to sell. I would like to thank our panelists today for their great insights, Marcus Burnett and Tabitha Turton. You can submit future questions for Q&As, or check out all of the links that we've discussed today for extensions and more in our show notes. And also, if you're interested, many of these extensions are included in GoDaddy's Managed WordPress e-commerce hosting bundle. So you'll get nearly $6,000 worth of free premium extensions with that bundle, along with a number of other things like a free domain and SSL. It has a very streamlined setup, and you get a lot, and it's very cost-effective, only about $20 a month, or actually less than $20 a month. So if you're looking for some great e-commerce hosting, you should check that out. Tabitha, Marcus, any last words to say to all the people out there listening to this podcast?
Get out there.
Oh, that's a good one.
Sell
Marcus,
stuff.
Marcus, you got a good, yeah, do you have a good snippy catchphrase you could throw in here too?
I don't know about snippy, but the more photos, the better. Sure.
All right. Thanks again, everyone. We look forward to talking with you again soon.